And once again, this is WBAI New York 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. The previous program was The Gary Noel Show, heard Monday through Friday at noon. It is now 1 p.m. Stay tuned for The Positive Mind coming up.
Hey everybody, Kev O'Donohue back with you with The Positive Mind, bringing you some ideas, concepts, and guests. Try and help you lead a more positively minded life. Ben Starr is with me today. Hey Ben.
Hey Kevin, great to be back.
And you know what? Women multiply. Yesterday we started with one, and today we have two. You know, my mother had 15 children. She could multiply. Boy, did she know how to add and multiply. But Fabiana Franco is here joining us today. Fabiana, introduce yourself. Tell us what you're all about.
I'm a clinical psychologist. I'm licensed in New York, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia.
And you practice down in D.C., you practice here at the Positive Mind Center,
yes.
And you practice in the Upper West Side.
Correct.
And you have a motor scooter somewhere parked out in front
somewhere.
So you can travel around. And Robin Stern was here with us yesterday. Robin, say hello.
Hi, I'm Robin Stern. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, psychotherapist in New York City and Long Island, specializing in body dysmorphic disorder and OCD.
BDD, PTSD, OCD, SAD. There's a lot of letters in our field. Yesterday we talked about body dysmorphic disorder. And, you know, I was asking Robin after the show, about what is this with bodybuilders? You know, I mean, we're all familiar looking at bodybuilders. If you want to know what dysmorphia, you take a 120-pound man and you turn him into a 240-pound man. What is that? What motivates a person to do that? What rituals, what things do you need to do to get a body from 120 pounds to 240 pounds? Well, Robin said, Kevin, that is something. What is that, Robin?
So oftentimes it's the same thing that people with body dysmorphic disorder have. It's a perceptual difference in how they see themselves. So for someone with body dysmorphic disorder, they may be focusing on more things like facial features that look defective to them. For someone with muscle dysphoria, they'll be focused on their muscles and how they look and feeling oftentimes that they don't look big enough. And again, they're not seeing things clearly due to their brain abnormalities, which we discussed yesterday as well. And so they'll be engaged in compulsive activities such as going to the gym very frequently, even taking steroids or other supplements to try to get them bigger. Mm-hmm. And they're just not seeing themselves clearly. And it's scary because they can get themselves into dangerous territory by taking certain supplements and things like that.
But to be clear, not everyone who's going to the gym and eating big meals and lifting weights is going to be dysmorphic.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We go back to that, what we discussed yesterday, when it's an impact in their quality of life or their functioning is inhibited. That's when we have to look at, is it something that we need to look at? Not everyone that goes to the gym, because we know in today's society, people are really interested in being fit and taking care of themselves. So not everybody's going to fall into that. And I think we need to be careful with that. Oftentimes we overdiagnose.
Right. Right, and if there is no distress in your life and you do want to have a different body, there's nothing wrong with that. We're
Absolutely.
Not saying that there is. But if it's insecurity or some shame is driving it, and yes, it is compromising your whole life or taking over your whole life, you might want to look at that.
Absolutely.
And BDD is one of the new diagnoses, body dysmorphic disorder, where we try to find first what's going on in this brain. Because you said yesterday people with BDD have different types of brains. Can you say anything about what areas of the brain are different? Do they know? Is it something that shows up on an MRI? Is it something, you know, in the amygdala or the prefrontal cortex or, you know, on different parts of the brain? Or is it just you go to a neurologist and these areas light up and they say, okay, you're prone to, let's say, compulsive activities? Because BDD is different than OCD.
Absolutely. What's really important to realize is that a UCLA study showed that they did a functional brain MRI of someone with body dysmorphic disorder and without, and their brain did light up in other areas. But also in terms of memory, people with BDD process things differently. Their decision-making looks different. Their planning, their inhibition and organization, their emotional processing, all those things are different, which we see lens to why maybe they think the way they think or perceive the way they do. So we really are looking at that to hopefully be able to gear treatment towards helping that, helping us look into that more.
And if you don't have a functional MRI and somebody has a bad memory and they're not able to plan and they are focused on their body, some slight feature of their body that they're exaggerating in your office, you don't need a functional MRI.
Absolutely
to say,
not.
This person actually suffers from BDD. Absolutely. Fabiana, do you want to add to this? I mean, we're going to talk about how this shows up across cultures, but are you familiar with the research on the brain?
I am, and I attended a conference a few months ago where they talk about that very study and some of the in the Q&A portion of the conference. I was a question of, so what happened pre-BDD, exactly, pre-diagnosis. Was the brain abnormality there or not?
Okay. So they were they're talking about this quite a bit at conferences. When did they discover this insight that it is a different brain? The UCLA study you mentioned.
Yeah. Just a few years ago, a really great psychiatrist is doing a lot of research. I have to say
that. Say his name.
Dr. Jamie Fusner, he's amazing. He really is spending a lot of time researching body dysmorphic disorder and anorexia as well and looking at the brain. And I think his hope is that if we can figure some of this stuff out, maybe we can get more tailored treatment. So I really like where he's going with that. We don't necessarily need a functional MRI to diagnose body dysmorphic disorder, but it just lends itself to knowing that there is a difference between one's brain who has it.
So anorexia is not BDD?
Absolutely not. And I think we need to make that very clear. Oftentimes I'll hear from people who have anorexia, I have body dysmorphic disorder. Just because you don't like your body and you're thin and you're engaging in those compulsions does not meet criteria for body dysmorphic disorder. There is a comorbidity, but it's not always going hands in hand. So we need to be careful with that.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. We have a big show today, folks. We have a lot to cover. We have a specialist here who does cross-cultural studies on mental disorders, and BDD is one of them. So we want to talk about, for instance, how is BDD different in Brazil or Argentina or Italy or Germany or South Africa? Because in this country, the plastic surgery industry is littered with people who suffer from BDD who do not go diagnosed, and their doctors are saying, yeah, come on in, get another treatment. You know, you need to get your lips done this week. So what can you tell us, just whet our appetite a little bit about BDD in other cultures?
We need definitely a lot more research, but there's a study that has been done recently comparing students from America and German students, and they found that those students that have BDD in America were more depressed and have a lower sense of self and self-esteem as well as body esteem than the German counterparts. There are different areas of the body that are
focused on
different cultures. For example, in Asia, the primary area of focus and concern is the eyelids.
Eyelids.
So
not the eyebrows.
Eyelids.
Not the forehead.
No.
Eyelids. And what do they want?
A lot of eyelid surgery in South America is face as well as body, like breast and hips and buttocks and rhinoplasty, which is nose surgery. Lips, just especially in countries like Brazil and Argentina, there are a lot of studies about that. In Turkey, primarily they are focusing on the face and the neck and the nose as well.
Interesting.
It's very interesting.
What can you do with an eyelid to change your sense of self or your adjustment in the world?
They have some serious issues in Asia about as a main area of focus, the eyelids.
Eyelids.
If it doesn't look the way it's supposed to look according to what they consider attractive, then it becomes an issue.
So what about statistics? Because not so much in this culture. I mean, obviously, American culture, American media is promoting looking young, looking good. You know, but in Brazil, you know, they definitely, I mean, the identity for women often is in Brazil based on their looks, more so than I think American women. Would you say that's true?
Brazil and Argentina, and but in adolescence.
Okay. So, so the pressure's on early.
Yes. And they also found in studies that depressed adolescents have much higher incidence of PDD in Argentina, for example, than other ages, other age groups.
Is it because they're seeing images every day in these countries, more so than like us, you know, in America on the highways are not pictures of women with big butts, right? But maybe in Brazil, in Argentina, there might be billboards and things emphasizing that. And so young people who are already insecure about their looks are seeing that and being reminded of that every day. Is that a factor?
Absolutely. That's a very strong factor, the cultural pressure. They are also finding some genetic predisposition and some pressure at home as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the culture and the society of what looks good and what doesn't is a huge factor.
So, yes, Robin, we didn't talk about this fact and this aspect of BDD yesterday. We'll want to talk more about it. But please just review for us what the features are of BDD.
Sure.
And when it starts.
So people with body dysmorphic disorder have a preoccupation with their appearance. How does this differ from someone that has normal preoccupations? Again, like we said, it has impairment in functioning. People often engage in avoidant behaviors, compulsive behaviors, and rituals. They camouflage the various aspects of their appearance that makes them uncomfortable. They compare themselves to other people. A thing I like to use with my clients is when you see yourself comparing yourself to another person, it's a comparison mind. They do a lot of mirror checking, excessive grooming, reassurance seeking, and they have a lot of social anxiety and depression associated with this as well.
And it is showing up in at a young age. It's starting often in adolescence, right?
It's definitely starting off at a young age, and unfortunately due to the people out there that aren't that familiar with body dysmorphic disorder, they're often misdiagnosed. And that's where we have this issue, and that's why this show is very important. Because people are diagnosed with depression and anxiety in adolescence when they're really exhibiting body dysmorphic disorder. And if they were diagnosed earlier, they would get proper earlier intervention, which can lead to recovery at a sooner age.
Yeah. And you brought something with you today that's going to help people, or even therapists, doctors, psychiatrists, that they can ask these young people questions that will tailor, you know, that can help them get a proper diagnosis. Not OCD, not anorexia, BDD. What's a sample question?
So one of the questions, this is a self-test for body dysmorphic disorder, the BDDQ. You can find it on the IOCDF website. Again, it's not a
What does IOCDF mean?
International OCD Foundation. That's where BDD has its home there. There's a lot of great information on there for the everyday person about resources, places for treatment, what is BDD. And one of those things that they have on there is the questionnaire. And it's just asked questions such as, are you worried about how you look? If yes, do you wish you can think about your appearance concerns less? Is your main concern with how you look aren't thin enough? And that comes to the question, is this anorexia? Because if that is your issue, you would not meet criteria for BDD. If your issue is just that you're not thin enough, you wouldn't meet criteria.
Sure. So I mean, all people suffering with anorexia are dealing with some type of dysmorphia, though
correct.
Not everyone who's dealing with body dysmorphic disorder correct. Is going to be anorexic.
Correct. Oftentimes, it's not weight related. What we found, research shows in the United States, that most people who have body dysmorphic disorder, their concerns are from the neck up. But that doesn't mean it can't change. So if someone's having skin concerns, let's say blotchiness or redness, if they have that concern with their neck up, it's oftentimes they may find that they're concerned with that on other parts of their body as well.
Mm-hmm. Almost makes you wonder why they don't call it facial dysmorphic disorder.
Right, and I think that's interesting that you mentioned that.
In Asia, maybe they'll change that. I don't know what the DSM says in Asia, but
if you're just joining us out there, you're tuned into The Positive Mind here on 99.5 FM WBAI. We're here with our guests today, Robin Stern and Dr. Fabiana Franco here, an associate here at the Positive Mind Center, talking about body dysmorphic disorder for the second day. You may have heard Robin here with us on the air yesterday, and we had to knock on Dr. Franco's door and ask her if she'd join us today. So thank you both for being here.
A little louder, Fabiana. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for having me again.
You know, and this happens to at least – you think it's underdiagnosed, first of all.
Absolutely.
So at least it's on the books for 3% of the population suffers from this. Do you think it's, 5%? Which means we're talking 10 million people.
I think so.
At least in the U.S.
I don't think they're coming to mental health professionals, and I think that leads us to a different discussion. I think they're going to dermatologists and plastic surgeons, and we need to be able to get into those doors and educate those doctors because a lot of those patients do have BDD, and they're presenting not in a psychiatrist's office, not in a therapist's office, but they're trying to get surgical procedures done. My question would be, would they be willing to give their patients these questionnaires because they can lose business?
Yeah, of course.
So that's my question.
Fabian, did you have any experience with this, like plastic surgeons and this ability to diagnose BDD? And do you know any that do actually say, no, I'm not going to do surgery because this is different?
Yes, in the plastic surgery community, Robin is absolutely right as far as other physicians' offices, but in the plastic surgery community, they are now looking into which patients actually can potentially have BDD.
That's great.
And there are some preliminary studies where there is some prevalence of that, and they definitely are trying to screen those patients for those very reasons. But, you know, we need a lot more research.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem.
Research aside, I mean, what would you say? If you were in practice as a plastic surgeon and you suspected somebody, you know, had BDD, a disorder that right now they're in the fugue and the obsession is of this disorder. 6 months from now, they might very much regret. I would throw in tattoos too, by the way. Right? That, you know, people, you could use a tattoo to cover over
Absolutely.
Something that you think is a flaw of yours. So what would you do? Tell me.
A recommendation that is being made, and I highly recommend as well, is when they feel like this particular patient may have BDD, just have them see a mental health professional to rule it out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in your best interest. Well, it's actually
you think that works?
Being done.
It is? Tell me.
More. But again, we need a lot more research, so I know that is something that is out there.
Sure.
There are some statistics. They're preliminary, but it's something that should be considered and applied.
So I'm going to ask an obvious question to see if you know the answer. What state in the United States is most popular for plastic surgery?
I would say it would be a close tie between California and New York. Los Angeles, Beverly Hills, but I could be wrong.
I will throw Utah in there as well.
Wow.
Yeah. Throw in where?
Utah.
Wow.
Utah. What? Mm-hmm. Why Utah? Isn't it? Mm.
There's such a preoccupation with body image and a lot of cases of BDD and anorexia and a lot of plastic surgery and
Yes, yeah, so, you know, because they have a show, I think, on
Miami.
Miami. Yeah, well, now you're talking cities.
I was going to guess Florida.
Yes, Florida.
Oh, right,
yeah.
That too, yeah.
Yeah. Well, somebody will Google that for us and get back to us when we take calls. Which state? But I would think California. I mean, Beverly Hills was the plastic surgery capital of the world.
The whole show, Nip Talk, that was a whole, show about plastic surgery.
Botched.
That was in California.
Right.
Botched.
Yeah. And you could see some of those clients really distorting how they look, you know. And if a trained professional, I think we should train plastic surgeons.
Absolutely.
With this BDD questionnaire. And, of course, the art of inquiry. You know, you can't tell somebody who has all this money who wants to, you know, get their cheeks done, simply tell them, you know, I think you might have something. You want to be able to engage these people to consider it before they go ahead and make the change.
And I agree with that. And I think what's important is, will we get the buy-in from the dermatologist? Will we get the buy-in from the plastic surgeon? Because they are making a lot of money off a BDD sufferer.
Mm-hmm.
Because people with BDD are going to go for endless procedures. Another really important fact is that most people who have surgery are not satisfied after, and their BDD actually gets worse. So that is why they need to be properly diagnosed and go for the right treatment, not plastic surgery or dermatological treatment.
How about this girl in the Ukraine? I'm sure you've heard of her. They call her the human Barbie.
Right.
She's had dozens and dozens and dozens of procedures. She keeps going back for more. I mean, if you look at a picture of her, she really does look like a Barbie. I mean,
brings a doll with her to the place and says, you know, this is what I want to look like.
She looks unlike any other human being I've ever seen.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm sure there's got to be some kind of dysmorphia involved there.
But again, we would want to sit and talk with her and find out different aspects of how it's affecting her life.
Right.
So we don't, because it leads us to the question, I know me and Kevin were talking about celebrities, whether it was Marilyn Monroe or Michael Jackson. And of course, in my mind, I would think Michael Jackson possibly could have had body dysmorphic disorder, but we would need to sit and talk to him and say, okay, was your quality of life affected because you didn't like how you looked? Were you not able to go out there because you needed to change the color of your skin or make your nose smaller? So just the act of getting multiple procedures doesn't necessarily mean you fit diagnostic criteria.
I totally agree. Again, we say clinically significant distress.
Absolutely.
You know, and motivation. I mean, is this done out of a sense of insecurity and isolation? And how severe is the distress? I mean, Michael Jackson had all the money in the world. And you would think, well, why would he, you know, think that he doesn't look well?
Right.
And he always claimed that he only had two surgeries. You know, so maybe, you know, he would think, no, absolutely no, I don't have BDD. But did it affect how he was with people, and did it keep him as a shut-in, and how did it affect his life? Because some people will say, I'm not really that affected, but as an outsider, you would say, oh, yeah, you're really suffering.
Right.
You
so we would have to speak to him and to know that.
Yeah. So you wanted to add something, Fabiana?
Yeah, it's also to what degree your function is impaired. It's
absolutely
not only just intrusive thoughts, but how is your function impaired across the board, not just in one area. Because having BDD doesn't mean that you're going to have impairment across the board. It can be just, say, interpersonal relationships, intimacy. It just varies from patient to patient.
Yes, right. What is that term called about post-plastic surgery remorse? I mean, there has to be a syndrome. There has to be a descriptor of that. Because, as you say, the research shows that people who do get plastic surgery within 6 weeks regret it.
Not only regret it, their symptoms are horrific. They can become suicidal, which leads us to that other.
Tell me, what do you mean?
I mean, what concerns me most, even so much with body dysmorphic disorder, is that about 80% of people who have this disorder have suicidal ideation in their lifetime. That is a lot. That's alarming. And 30% of people who are diagnosed with BDD attempt suicide.
And so this is different than any other disorder. Like anorexia, they don't have such severe numbers of suicidal ideation.
It's scary.
OCD, they don't. PTSD. None of these things have this kind of percentage.
No, yet there's not enough research. There's not enough trained professionals who understand the intricacies of this disorder. And I had a client that went to an inpatient hospitalization and was going in there for issues relating to her BDD. And the psychiatrist who was evaluating her told her she should be more concerned with more important things in her life. So he just discounted her entire rationale for why she was there and her suicidality. So we have a problem here.
I'd say that's a problem.
Yeah.
I mean, a psychiatrist is not willing to listen and is rather saying encouraging.
Or they don't get it.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Do you know numbers on the suicidality across cultures?
No.
Fabiana?
Because we need a lot more research.
Okay.
But there, it's definitely in the increase.
And the increase after the surgery or any of the improvements, that there is an increase in suicidal ideation.
Absolutely.
On top of the already high number that's
right.
already
Absolutely.
There.
Correct. There's regret. I shouldn't have done it.
There's
then they
regret.
Like, yeah.
Right.
Hopelessness. I'm not getting better. It's never going to change.
Mm-hmm. I've irredeemably altered my look, and I cannot get back to what I originally looked like. And I'm reminded of it every day, every time I walk in front of a mirror or a storefront window.
Or it looks worse.
Or it looks worse. Right. All of these things. So, again, before we go to the break, body dysmorphic disorder. You have a mirror in your pocket, and you're checking it all the time. Is that it?
It's that, and it's also not able to engage, like the doctor said, in interpersonal interactions. Intimacy can be, you know, inhibited as well. They have difficulty working, going to school. They stay home. All these things are part of that, not just the compulsive behavior of the mirror checking. That's just a component of it. But how does it impact your functioning overall and your quality of life? And you'll see across the board, people with BDD, their quality of life is often very poor. But with the right treatment, which we will discuss, the CBT
yeah.
and the ERP,
when we come back,
you could definitely get an improvement in functioning. And using more of the diagnostic scales that the psychologists use or therapists use, you can actually see, it's called the BDD Y-box, which is another scale that we use for body dysmorphic disorder. You could see a decrease in symptoms, and people like myself become subclinical after doing the treatment. So this is how great this treatment is. We just need more professionals to know it, know how to treat it, know how to address it, and we can see a lot of change.
Fantastic. We're going to take your calls today also for Fabiana Franco and Robin Stern. Yesterday we had Phyllis, Laura, and Amy call in. Body dysmorphia, what about your own look or somebody you know? Do you know somebody who's suffering with this? Have they been misdiagnosed? Do you know the proper treatments? Because these ladies here are here to tell us what are the proper treatments. What are the treatments that are out there? Do you come from a different culture? And we'd love to hear from people from different cultures who struggle with this in their own way. So, Fabiana, before we go, how about Italy? Is there any body dysmorphia in Italy, or is there any concern?
Body dysmorphia happens across the globe. There are not specific studies that I'm aware of.
For Italy.
But it's an issue that is
huge in the UK.
Huge in the UK.
Huge. And they have some great studies there. Huge.
Fantastic. So yeah. Our number here, 212-757-5555. If you're from another country and you can contribute to this, we would love to hear if you know somebody who's suffering from body dysmorphic disorder, or you yourself, you have some thing that you think is wrong with your look and you can't get away from being obsessed about it. 212-757-5555. Ben?
212-757-5555 is the number to call. We're going to take a short musical break, and we'll be back after this with your phone calls. You are tuned into The Positive Mind. And again, if you connect with this topic, if this is something that you can relate to, or you've had a loved one, someone close in your life go through this, give us a call. Talk about it. Let us know what it means to you. 212-757-5555. We'll be back after this.
do thoughts of you make you high or shy?
How do you feel, yeah?
When you'd rather fly than die. Say yes.
Never know someone who takes personal of the rain.
Say yes.
Say yes, say yes, yeah.
How do you view you, Kevin?
When I look in the mirror, how do I view me?
That's the song.
It's a complicated answer.
Funkadelic here on WBAI. How do you view you?
Oh, it's a great title. And that's what we're talking about. How do you view you?
Hmm.
That's alliterative. How do you view you?
Let's take a quick call. We have Joe on the line. Thanks for calling in, Joe.
Hi, I'm a Japanese American man, and I wanted to ask if you were aware that in the Asian community, a lot of people have
Joe, let me interrupt you. Is there any way to lower your radio or lower something on your end? Because you're coming across really loud. We're glad you called because we want to hear from your call.
Is that better?
That is a little better. Go ahead.
Okay. I wanted to know, is the panel aware that a lot of the Asians have surgery on their eyelids?
Yeah.
Because we lack the epicanthic fold, and they want to look more Western. I'll hang up and listen for your answer.
Oh, terrific. There is the answer. Something about wanting to look more Western.
Are you saying that a lot of Asians get eye surgery because they lack a fold in their eye? Can you speak to that?
The research is preliminary, and it didn't go into specifics, but it's talking about the cross-cultural comparisons of different countries and what surgeries they do, and Asia in general was eyelid surgery.
Oh, okay, but he's telling us the reason is that they want to look more Western.
The question is, why? You know, is it not that they're comfortable in their own skin? Why are they trying to look different?
Western culture is the norm right now. I mean, you know, Western culture is what people are looking at. Mm-hmm. I mean, not that this is the triumph of civilization, but, I mean, the upsurge of countries has been that the West is the most advanced in terms of material wealth. And maybe it's the exposure to that that this – Japanese people want to look more Western.
Joe, are you talking about Asians that live in America or Asians that
Joe,
are in Asia?
Joe actually hung up.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Welcome to the show.
Oh,
this is your first time. So yeah, 212-757-5555. We do want to hear the reason. So if Joe does want to call back, maybe we can go into this even further, Joe. Just try and have a lower tone on your end because we really want to cover this. So Western, you know, what is the motivation, let's say, in another country for...
I'd like to know if it's the cross-cultural comparison between Asians in America versus Asians in Asia.
Right.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That was the first thing I would like to ask.
Okay. So tell us about the specifics in, let's say, Brazil. What are they focusing on there to change their look in Brazil?
Brazil and Argentina are big in face, head to toe.
Head to
buttocks,
toe.
Hips, face,
and
nose.
A lot of people travel to Brazil.
Yes, that's correct.
To get surgery. What's the reason for that?
The surgery is less costly. And
are they professionals over there? Because you hear about botched surgeries.
You hear about that in Mexico a lot.
Yes. Yeah. So we have another call.
Yeah, we have Georgia on the line. Thanks for calling, Georgia.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I just wanted to tell you that I'm in thrall of your show.
Thank you.
I love it. I love the topic. I just wanted to comment in your talk about BDD resonates with me. I'm a woman of color, and I'm pretty sure that it is almost impossible for a woman of color in the United States not to have some form of BDD.
Say
or
why.
Some vulnerability to it.
Go ahead. Fascinating. Tell me why.
Well, and obviously I'm not the spokesperson for women of color all over the world, but as a person who is a Native African, all right, as part of the diaspora, not necessarily African American, the skincare industry is making a killing with skincare lightening products.
Lightening. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to lighten the skin. Yes.
Wow.
Because fair skin confers a certain level of privilege and a level of intelligence and social mobility, and dark-skinned women are still seen as coarse, uneducated, and unattractive. So, yeah.
How about this? So you feel that you yourself are vulnerable to that? Do you have some of these products?
No, but what I can share an experience that I had as a child.
Sure.
Where I would have family members slathering this cream on my face to make my skin lighter, and I had a horrible reaction to it because I'm allergic to hydroquinone,
mm-hmm.
and it damaged my skin for many years, and I had a significant scarring on my face as a result.
Wow.
So, you know, I've recovered. My face is fine now. But, you know, when we look at the media, if you look at Vogue magazine in 2017 as compared to 2005 or even 1995,
right.
There was no visibility of, shall I say, like a transcultural perspective.
Sure, sure.
Okay.
And now there definitely is.
Yeah, I think now there's more of a response to, you know, really include women, but still... there is a certain body type that is kind of perceived as the norm or as mm-hmm. primarily desirable,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
I'm sure that many women are vulnerable to that.
I totally agree with you. We love this call because you're actually even saying that this was done to you as a child. It isn't something you decided to do, but your culture, people in your family or somebody mm-hmm. was encouraging this for you.
Of course, and I'm sure my story is not unique. I'm sure upon, you know, further, you know, discovery and research and conversations, many black women will talk about having hot comb experiences gone awry, where they try to straighten the hair with a hot comb, their ears get singed,
mm-hmm.
they lose their hairline, the weave industry with the... many of the solvents or the chemicals that they use to treat the hair that's being sewn on, many people have allergic reactions. There's alopecia, areata. You know, it's just a cascade of other symptoms that we wouldn't necessarily associate with having a dysmorphic or distorted image.
I totally agree with you, and thank you for adding this aspect to it. Very fascinating, very, very interesting. Georgia, the name is, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Georgia,
yes,
call, keep listening. We love your call. This is a very thorough call, shedding a big light on this cultural aspect, so we appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Georgia. 212-757-5555, number to call. We're just talking quickly here about BDD, body dysmorphic disorder. So if you have experience with that or seen loved ones go through it, give us a call, 212-757-5555.
So there's a whole culture that we didn't – in our culture, in Western culture here, that they're talking about being less black, being having less density to your color is a good thing because it means more affluence, more intelligence. Subconsciously, the message is that, you know, the lighter you are, the more money you'll make, the more competent you are, the more pretty and handsome you are. Strange, very, very, very complex message. Go ahead.
That also happens with Hispanic Americans or Latin Americans in the U.S. However, that doesn't necessarily mean that they do have BDD.
But there's, Georgia was saying there's a vulnerability. So,
yes.
So what are you saying? Latin cultures in the U.S. are susceptible to comparing themselves.
They experience similar instances like Georgia in terms of, the parents trying to make them lighter.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
What I think is interesting about that is that it's definitely a predisposition for that, possibly, but we then need to go back to, does it impact quality of life and functioning?
Of course.
That's the core component of what BDD is.
Right.
So just the fact that they're putting creams on, mm-hmm. or that doesn't mean you have it. And I don't want to disregard what George is saying, but
– I mean, her family was doing this to her.
But did it impact her ability to function? That is the core component.
Absolutely.
That and also to what degree.
Correct.
It impair functioning.
Correct. Right.
It's true, but it's still, you know, even if it's not a disorder in those cases, it's still abuse. It's still abusive. It still could lead to other mental issues, depression, anxiety, and other problems. So,
100%.
I mean, it doesn't have to be diagnosed as a disorder. We're not just limiting the discussion to body dysmorphic disorder. We're talking about how a culture communicates to its people and other cultures that a certain standard is required. And that somebody taking that message seriously and changing themselves and obsessively because of that.
Well, even like what Joe said, the previous caller with the eyes, that's the similar thing versus the skin color.
We actually have Joe back on the line. Joe, thanks for calling us back.
Hey, Joe.
Yes, thanks for asking me to call back. I think one of the things is you have to understand when you grow up Asian American, you're taught that you almost have an inferiority complex to the West. You look around, you see the automobile, the jet airplane, the computer, things we use every day, all invented in the West. And so what happens is culturally we're always trying to imitate. I mean, when the rock bands, they come over to Japan, you know, all the things growing up you idolize are Western-based. And a lot of the women, they see the Cindy Crawford, the supermodels, and they yeah. see their eyes that lack the fold, and then they go and want to have the folds put in their eyes. It's very strange, but you have to be Asian American to understand how people think.
Thank you, Joe, for calling back. That does shed light on it. Just that little bit there does shed light on it. So they're doing it to get a fold in their flap of their eyelid because that's what successful American women have.
Right.
Is it Joe?
Yes.
What about men? Are men affected at all? What are men doing, Japanese men?
No, not so much because there is, in the Asian culture, you know, the men seem to be more secure. Men are more dominant in Asian culture, you know, right or wrong, but it is the truth. So, the men don't feel that way, but the women do.
I got it.
And I know several friends, women friends, who've had this surgery done. It's quite common in the Asian community.
Go ahead.
Joe, do you feel like there's a difference between Asian Americans, in essence, Asians that live in America, versus Asians that are in Asia in regards to this particular topic and surgery in specific?
That's a good point. I think the longer or the more years that Asian women spend in America, the more comfortable they are in their own, self-confidence. So, amongst, let's just say, very wealthy Asian women in Asia, this is a common surgery.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I never even had heard of this procedure until I was told about it by some Korean friends who were Korean, not Korean-American. They told me that this is extremely common in upper-middle-class families, that many women are getting this procedure done for the eyelid fold.
Joe? Yes, it's called the epicanthic fold.
How do you spell epi?
Epicanthic.
Fold. Go ahead.
Epicanthic. E-P-I-C-A-N-T-H-I-C.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Joe, keep listening. Keep calling. We appreciate your call. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. 212-757-5555.
Yeah.
The number to call.
Doing things a little differently here at The Positive Mind, having women on, and we're going to be having women for the next few months because we want to do a psychology of women. Freud always said, what do women want? But he didn't say it that calmly. He said, what do women want? And that's what we're going to try and find out in the next couple of months. Some women want to change their epicanthic fold in this country. So, you know, there's a lot of pressure. We will talk with women about that on the air, the pressure of being a woman and how it differs than being a man. But we're also adding here to the show this cultural aspect, this cross-culture. And I think it's fascinating hearing from Georgia saying that the color of your skin can send a message of how intelligent and how successful you'll be. And now Joe telling us about, you know, your beauty is, you can look the most beautiful Japanese woman in the world, but if you do not have this fold in your eyelid, you're just not going to get the prize guy. Go ahead.
I love the distinction that he made between the acculturation component of Asian Americans versus people in Asia, which adds another layer to the conversation.
Yes. Yes, it really does.
Let's take another quick call. We have Jill on the line. Hi, Jill. Thanks for calling.
Hi. This question is actually for Robin. I listened to the show yesterday, and you were talking a little bit more not just about diagnosis but treatment. And I think that she mentioned CBT, ERP.
Yes, she did.
Yes. How about talk therapy? What do you think is the value of talk therapy, or does it have a place in treating body dysmorphic disorder?
So to answer that question, I think that the first line of treatment would be CBT and exposure response prevention. I think as time goes on, it may lend itself to some talk therapy, looking back at certain things. But the gold standard treatment is doing the cognitive behavioral therapy, looking at the distorted thoughts and challenging those. And then the way we reinforce that is by doing the exposures and doing the actual experiment. So if someone has an issue with their skin, what they're going to do is, if mirror checking is their compulsion, we would first want to discuss some of the distortions they have about that and challenge those thoughts. So what is the function of skin? Someone who has body dysmorphic disorder would say the function of their skin is to look perfect, but we're going to then debunk that by saying that the function of skin is just to be there and protect us.
And like, does everybody who has skin have to have perfect skin?
Correct. And we're going to, and then in order to continue to challenge that is to do the exposure work.
Okay.
So that would be, like we talked about yesterday, going out there, putting stuff on the face, showing that we can interact with people, and people aren't going to make judgments about that.
Mm-hmm.
But the response prevention, which we didn't discuss yesterday, is that once you're done with the exposure, you don't go back and do the compulsion. And the original compulsion is to mirror check. So after you go back and do the exposure, you don't go back into the mirror to check to see what's there.
Right.
Because then that would actually void the exposure at all. So that's the exposure response prevention aspect of it.
And so you're also substituting something else for the mirror.
Absolutely.
You're substituting exposure to other people seeing and evaluating your face and not feeling there's anything strange or odd about it.
Right.
And so you do more and more of that and less of the availability of the mirror. It reduces symptoms. So this really stops the bleeding. Cognitive behavioral therapy.
Exposure response prevention.
And exposure
and so,
response prevention.
If you don't mind, how,
sure.
I mean, it sounds like you have to have a tremendous expertise to be able to, you know, work with a patient and work to such a degree and in such depth. How would you find someone with that kind of training?
Go ahead.
So the International OCD Foundation, which is a website, they're the hub for any OCD-related disorder, which BDD falls under. And people who have training in cognitive behavioral therapy, exposure response prevention would be the go-to person. You want to ask a therapist, do you have experience working with people with body dysmorphic disorder?
That's a prime, you know, that's an absolute necessity, because you could be a CBT
and have
therapist
no clue.
And not really know the language of
Absolutely.
BDD and the diagnosis of BDD and how to handle it. So this is a really good question. Where does somebody go? Say it again.
So it's the International OCD Foundation, the IOCDF. Again, you want to look for someone that specializes in the treatment of not only OCD but body dysmorphic disorder. And they have the ability to work with patients that have these disorders.
And Jill, we have a pro right here in our studio. You're talking to Robin Stern. You can
always
Google her and get in touch with her, because she had BDD, and now she's a certified CBT person dealing with BDD. Is that right?
Yes,
I have that right.
Absolutely.
And how long have you suffered with BDD?
I was diagnosed with body dysmorphic disorder at 22 years old, but I can say that I probably had it as early as 16 years old.
And you're still working on it?
I'm in recovery, but BDD is a lifelong disorder. With the right treatment, you really do have a quality of life more so than I've ever imagined. And I think that's really key for people that are struggling out there that are listening to this show, is that there is treatment. You can get through this. It's difficult. And I think I wanted to say that this treatment is not easy.
Yeah.
And that's why I pride myself in saying I've been there. I understand what this treatment is. It's very difficult. But the work will show beautiful results.
Fantastic.
But it's not easy, and it is difficult.
Fabiana,
is this intensive treatment? Or, I mean, if you went once a week, would that do, or does it have to be more intensive?
Depending upon the severity of someone's BDD would determine how often they would need to go for treatment. Ideally, someone in treatment would be able to run their own exposures by themselves, and that's what we want them to do. We don't want them to just do treatment when they're with their therapist once a week.
Yeah, and that's a feature of CBT in general, is homework.
Absolutely.
The therapist gives you exposure homework, and so you come back in and you report on your mood and your feelings from doing the homework. So I would think that in the early stages, especially depending on the severity, that twice a week would be appropriate, and then tailoring that off to maybe once a week or maybe even three times a week if you are in crisis.
Absolutely.
But I think Jill is asking a really important question that Fabiana can talk to, because I think at some point it becomes CBT has done its job, but you still have other variables that you need to just talk about. Is that true, would you say, Robin?
Absolutely. I think that, like I shared, that thank you, Jill, for calling in. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jill.
Oh, you're welcome.
Bye-bye. So go ahead. So the CBT has done its job. The client has learned to do the homework and is doing it on their own. But there's something else at work here. So then they want to talk to you as, like, what? As their emotional being. They want to talk more about
the developmental. Then there's a place for that. Learning about maybe they have some big revelation that something happened to them when they were a child, that this is why they have it. And I think, you know, Dr. Franco can speak to that.
Yeah.
We have time for maybe one.
I want to hear Fabiana's.
Yeah, go ahead.
Response first.
So the clinical presentation and the level of complexity is huge in terms of determining, you know, the number of sessions that is required
for each case. Yeah.
And therefore the importance of individually tailored a treatment plan for each case.
Absolutely.
And each patient or each client. Yeah. And let's be mindful that the goal is to enhance the quality of life and that there's hope.
Yeah.
It is hard work, like Robin said. There's hope.
But also in some cultures, they emphasize more the talk therapy as opposed to the CBT aspect.
The talk therapy in combination of CBT and some DBT skills are used
of course.
Stress.
Like radical acceptance, mindful awareness,
okay,
taking time out, and along with CBT exposure and the root. Why do you feel that way? What happened? Where is this coming from?
Were you bullied as a child? I mean,
right.
Robin mentioned yesterday that she feels that bullying had some impact in her getting the disorder in the first place. And so you got to that as a variable later on in the treatment. So
it was that aha moment.
It was.
Oh, wait a second.
Yeah, okay.
I was bullied as a kid and told that I didn't want to be a part of things because of the way I looked.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Fabian.
I would like to add something quickly to
go
that.
Ahead.
So the question in that case for me, clinical, will be, so why was Robin susceptible to bullying comparative to
other child
that was not?
Why was Robin and not her sister vulnerable to
the neurological, biological cause?
So there's that component.
But I think what's important here is to know that this does exist.
Yes.
And that there is hope, there is help, and there is treatment.
Yes.
Ladies, 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 we have to have you back. You've opened up a can of worm, and now we have another consonant, BDD, added to our language, PTSD, SAD, and OCD. And please, if you want to call us here at the center and get in touch with Fabiana Franco or Robin Stern, you can reach them at 212-757-4488. And Fabiana is telling me there's something called complex post-traumatic stress disorder, which
and
we will talk about.
Apologies to everyone who called and wasn't able to get through.
Yes,
unfortunately, we did run out of time today, but thank you so much for listening. And remember, you can find us online at thepositivemind.com and send us an email, positivemind@wbai.org. And you can always find us podcast on the iTunes store. It's free. If you ever miss an episode, just go on the iTunes store, search Positive Mind. And you can subscribe and get all the episodes you missed delivered to your computer absolutely free. I'm Ben Starr, here with Kevin O'Donohue and our guests today, Fabiana Franco, Robin Wright. Thank you.
Robin Stern.
Robin Stern. Thank you
she
both.
She looks like Robin Wright a little bit.
Thank you both for being here.
Thank you for having
me.
It's been a pleasure. Happy Thanksgiving to all of our listeners. We love you very much, and we'll see you soon. Take care.